Everyone, welcome to Ending the Drought, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast. I'm Jason Webster, here with the other hosts, Jay Cranston and Jeff Webster, and this is Season 3, Episode 19.
Fellas.
Gentlemen, how nice to see you all again.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
It's been a couple weeks, huh?
Yes, yes.
A couple weeks since we've been off the air.
Right. Had a bit of a break there. It's just timing-wise, everything kind of worked out weird.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
Something was going on, yeah.
Yeah, Jeff, you had something going on, and then last week, Tuesday, my birthday fell on Tuesday, so.
Yeah, happy birthday again, belated.
Yes. I had to, you know, do the family thing, so I couldn't skip that.
No way.
You know what I mean?
Nope.
But I did go to a Sabres game for my birthday, which is awesome.
Which was a good game.
So that was cool.
That was a good one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I usually try to get to a Sabres game once a year around my birthday time, so I felt good about that.
It's very cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How'd, speaking of games that you went to, you most recently went through the weird weather in Buffalo this past weekend. How'd you enjoy your time? Pretty good?
The thing is with, so when I left home, it was snowing, which I'm like, all right, this is fine. It's a light snow. Right. There's freaking no wind. I'm like, this is great. I'm like, this is really good tailgate weather.
Sure.
I'll take that all day, every day. But we get to Orchard Park and it started light sprinkling, so I'm like, here we go. It's gonna be kind of rainy, snow mix.
Yep.
And then it was kind of like just real light and it on and off, not bad. But 11 o'clock, dude, it started freaking pouring rain.
Oh,
like,
man.
Like ripping rain.
And wow.
We're standing under our tent like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So we waited till the last minute to walk up and we put our tent away. And it was still raining, but it like slowed down.
Right.
But yeah, dude, we were in our seats till halftime and my uncle went up to get some beers and he texted me, he's like, dude, just come up, I got a table. And we just stayed up there. There's guys that sit next to us.
Right.
That's been fans, you know, had season tickets probably about the same time we have. And they came up and hung out at the table. And we just stayed up in the club and watched the game and ate some food and drank up there and watched it because it was just one of those games where it was just shitty, you know?
Yeah, only in Buffalo, man. Out. Like, you get the gamut of snow and rain on the same day.
Dude, yeah.
It's just, there's nothing worse than trying to be outside when it's 33 degrees and it's freaking just raining on you.
I told you once before, man, I was out there in 40 degrees in rain and I freaking hated it.
Ugh.
It was like ice crystals. You know, it was horrible. And it was 40.
Yeah.
It still sucked.
Dude, it's, you want to know something cool that I found out? The guy across the aisle from us, there's a couple behind him. They're probably like in their mid-50s, somewhere around there. And I just found out they've been season ticket holders as long as I've been there.
No, no kidding.
But I just figured out or found out from the guy that's next to us. He said, yeah, he goes, the people behind me, he goes, did you know they fly in for every home game?
Holy shit.
And I'm like, no, I guess they're from North Carolina. And yeah, they fly in for every home game.
That's crazy. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's dedicated, man.
But
now I feel bad. Like I'm 20 minutes away and I never go to a game or hardly ever.
Hey, man.
Well, yeah, good for them.
Yeah,
though,
I could
move.
If I moved down south somewhere, I'd never come back for a game.
Like, yeah,
I would just never go to a Bills game.
It doesn't
again.
Mean you don't like them or you're not a fan.
No, it's just, it's not
those
me.
People really enjoy the experience. Obviously, they're not going to go.
Yeah, I'm sure they've been.
Good for them.
Seen the ticket holders for a while, but I just thought that was kind of a
neat
thing.
That's very Bills Mafia type of thing to do.
Yes. Very
cool.
What
I mean, I'm sure there's probably, that's more than that one story about people who travel or, you know, there's people from Toronto and Rochester and Syracuse that come to the games all the
time.
And
we've talked about that before.
That's cool.
You know, statistically,
man.
As of around 2020, Bills fans are more prevalent and widespread than any other fan base other than, you know, previously New England.
Yeah.
But now we're on top.
Yeah, it's big.
We got fans everywhere.
So speaking of the game, you know, how do you think it went? I mean, you were there.
Our defense played, our defense played awesome. I mean, they were on point, and I mean, Milano was big,
as usual.
Our defensive line, Shaq, they had a great game, and he took it a little personal because, like he said, the Bills the Jets were supposed to play the Bills last year, the Jets cut him
right
the week before the Bills game, so he took that kind of personal.
Yeah.
You could tell that.
He said it was important to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it meant something.
But, I mean, Greg Rousseau had a great game. Defensively, we were spot on. Offensively, it didn't look great.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk this week about that. Like, really going back to even the second half of the Green Bay game, that the offense hasn't seemed to find its rhythm. Sean McDermott, actually, during the game, you were at it, so you didn't get to hear it. But you know how they always do that, like just before halftime or after halftime, they talk to the coaches or whatever.
Yeah.
And he even said, we're just, you know, we haven't found our rhythm on offense yet.
Correct.
You know, that's one thing we got to correct or whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's such a bizarre thing that it even happened a little bit, whether it was coincidence or not, it started before the bye. It's not like the bye triggered this or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, they had those first half a dozen games or a handful of games that, yeah, they looked, you know, ungodlike, but just like ridiculously good for those first handful of games. They were really smoking.
Yeah. So what, yeah, if you had to try and pinpoint it on anything, I mean, the easy answer would be to just say it's Josh, but I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's accurate. So what would you say is your key player positions that need to be addressed here?
Well, I
could tell you mine.
Yeah, go for it. You got something in your mind already.
Well, the biggest thing that we're having issues with right now is dropping the ball.
Yep.
We are the number one. We lead the NFL in drops. We have two players that are on our starting wide receiver group that have the lowest catch rate in the NFL. So right there tells you.
I know Gabe Davis is one. Is McKenzie the other one?
McKenzie's the other one.
He's got to be the other one, yeah.
So right there it tells you that, you know, and it's not a correlation. They went out and got John Brown for a reason.
Yeah.
They went out and obviously got Cole Beasley now for a reason.
Right.
We got to catch the ball. It's a drive killer. It will kill you completely every game, no matter who you're playing, if you drop more than 6-7 passes a game, which we are continuously doing.
Right. I know this past game I heard 4, but I know McKenzie
it was 6.
Was it 6?
6. That's okay. What I counted.
And it's a compounding issue because it's one of those things that we talked about, you know, trying to improve the run game, take some pressure off of Josh. The minute you do that, you're cutting down your number of receptions per drive in half, right? So now you have to actually complete those catches because they're super fucking important.
Yep.
So you can't have a run game if you drop one or two every time.
Well, exactly, because you can't move the chains, right?
No.
I mean, a successful run game is coordinated with moving the chains in first downs. You can get big chunks pretty regularly through the pass.
Yeah, we're always going to have
game has
we're
to
always
going to
have the bomb passes, but we need to make those short passes.
Yeah, it works in conjunction one with the other. You need success when you're on the ball in order to move the chains successfully on a regular basis. A case in point this week. What was it, like 3 for 12 or 2 for 9 on third down?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're actually normally up there in the league when it comes to third down, the first down percentage from third down.
Mm-hmm.
And this past game, they struggled hard.
It was a combination, I think, of a few things. Obviously, drops is the number one lead in this game, I feel.
Sure.
Number two would have been weather. The weather wasn't ideal, so I think that could have played a little bit into it. I'm not going to throw out an excuse and say it's weather, but I feel that played a little bit into it.
Thank God we're not getting a dome. We play so good in the rain and snow.
Yeah.
Don't even go there.
And then three, we faced, I mean, let's be honest, the Jets' defense is good. I mean,
it's
they're a top five defense right now.
It's like number two currently in yards. Well,
they're
it's
good
tied
defense.
For first in yards allowed per play.
Yeah, they're a good defense. I mean,
it's a good defense.
They're good up front. They're good in the middle with their linebacking core. They got Sauce Gardner. I mean, they're a solid group.
They're up and coming, for sure.
And when you have a combination of just you're not able to move the ball through the air because of weather and not catching the ball. I mean, it shows. Josh Allen had 132 yards passing. So
right, and it doesn't help when you can't run the ball. I mean,
right.
Devin Singletary knocked off a pretty nice run, I think 16 yards or something like that. Other than that, I mean, he only ran 8 times.
Right.
Cook ran 4, and I think they might have gave the ball to
the rest is
Naheem
Josh.
Hines yeah. one time, other yep. than Josh.
Yep.
So, I mean, when your backs are carrying the ball 9 times an entire game, that's not a successful running game at all.
No,
that's not. So, and like I say, even James Cook, he had 4 carries, 6 yards, you know?
I mean, he was a non-factor.
He was struggling, you
yep.
know?
Yep.
But again, that defensive line, I mean, if we can't I'm sorry, but Spencer Brown, he struggled mightily during that game. Deion Dawkins had a couple of penalties, you know? I mean,
yeah, our offensive line
struggled.
Yeah,
they did.
They've had their issues this year, you know? And the biggest thing that I'm at least thankful for right now is the health of our offensive line. We've had some issues a little bit.
Bates got injured during the game, I think.
Yeah. But if you look at throughout the NFL, and there's a bunch of teams that have issues. I mean, the Cowboys are one of them. The Eagles are like the only team in the NFL right now that hasn't lost a starter on offense. But actually, the Chargers have like six starters on IR.
I know.
You know, it's just from the offensive line. So.
Yeah, even the Bills, you're looking at Von Miller and now, you know, Mike Hyde's gone, Tommy Doyle. You know, you've got some players that contribute that aren't going to be available this year.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, our offensive line's been decent enough to get us to this point. I mean, we're 10-3.
Right.
But, I'm not going to get into the draft and all that stuff. But I think that we have to start looking possibly in that direction for the future.
I know we've filled in a lot.
To solidify some positions.
Yeah, we filled in a lot in free agency and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we talked about that a little bit too, is when the trade deadline was coming up that we didn't really make a lot of movement that we could have.
Yeah.
There were certain things people were talking about that could have been big impact players that, you know, I don't know. I mean, James Cook wasn't really the greatest pickup to me so far. I don't know if he just needs to be developed or what, but
well,
like,
he's had those moments that you
occasionally
expect from a rookie where against New England, I think it was, where he had the 80 yards or whatever. He's
shown a few flashes.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, but this year's has some head scratchers, though, right, guys?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, the Kaiir Elam thing I was talking to you about today on the phone, Jeff, like he gets healthy scratched, and then, Xavier Rhodes plays for him, and then Xavier Rhodes gets healthy scratched.
Right.
Kaiir Elam is on the roster, but
he doesn't see the field.
Get any snaps, really.
Right.
And they're putting Dane Jackson in. And honestly, I mean,
Dane Jackson looked really bad, man.
Dane Jackson does not look good.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lack of confidence somewhere in the coaching decisions. And I'm not sure if it all falls squarely on McDermott or if there's somebody else that's kind of the poison pill. But it definitely seems like they don't have a solidified plan.
I've had a lot of that conversation, especially since the Jets game. And it's like there's a certain amount of I don't know if you want to call it disorganization.
Disunity.
Like you said, just head scratchers. Like I don't really understand. Actually, before I forget, I did think at times the play calling looked a little more creative than in previous games. There was a couple of things they did that I thought were pretty interesting.
You're talking about the offensive play calling.
Offensive play calling, yeah.
And speaking of offensive play calling, I did see someone posted on Twitter, and I don't remember the exact number, but this time last year, you got to remember we were 7-6.
Right.
We were 10-3. We actually have I don't know exactly the number again, but we actually have a better offensive efficiency rate than we did this time last year.
Really?
Correct.
That's so weird, because I read an article today where somebody pointed out that at some point you got to consider an offense that's struggling, you got to look at the offensive coordinator. Maybe there's a disconnect between him and Josh, what they want to do,
and
whatever.
We were doing it 7-6. We were all wanting Dable's head at that point.
Well, but you have to keep in mind, too, that at this time last year is right when it kind of turned around.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can do that again this year, because we really need to.
It was almost exactly when we lost that overtime game to Tampa Bay.
Yep.
I think that made us 7-6.
Yep.
That's when it just seemed like the lights came on. The guys went.
We strung him off at that point.
And it could be because his back was against the wall. People were calling for his head a little bit. You know, maybe. He pulled something and it worked.
You know? But we pulled off four
on the right
straight going into the playoffs. And that's, we talked about Devin Singletary. That's when he turned it on.
Yeah.
You know, because those last six games, four regular season, two playoff games, they look like a different team. They looked like they looked in the first two games this year.
And here's the thing that concerns me a little bit is, if you remember, part of that process of why we did so well is they started utilizing Isaiah McKenzie, Gabe Davis, Dawson Knox, when they hadn't been seeing as much play time. Now they are seeing the play time.
Right.
And it's not necessarily as impactful as we'd hope. What do we have to do? I mean, hopefully Cole Beasley will make a big impact, but I don't know,
but
man.
But will he? I mean,
I was going to say that. Cole Beasley coming in.
We don't have an ace in the hole at this point.
Yeah. Right. Those two guys coming in, to me, now, the reports are saying the team welcomed both moves with open arms with John Brown and Cole Beasley. You know, I'd say that's correct in a sense, but I also think it's got to be, like, for instance, McKenzie's got to be like, either A, I got to pick my. I mean, they're bringing back Cole Beasley because I'm not doing what I need to do.
Correct. I'm not sure he'll see game time much anymore. I'm really not.
They're going to give Cole Beasley the shot, you know.
For sure.
You talk about last year, if you remember right, Isaiah McKenzie, for the most part, was that gadget guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he started sidelining Beasley guy. Right around this point last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the jet sweep guy. He was a very limited role.
That's where he excelled when defense didn't really prepare for the guy.
Right.
And he was brought in certain packages, and all of a sudden, oh, man, wow, McKenzie, a 25-yard catch. That was huge. That was a big play. But he wasn't relied on to do that on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He didn't see 70, 80 snaps a game, or 70%, 80% of snaps.
Right.
He just didn't.
Yeah.
And Cole Beasley, obviously, his greatest asset to the Bills and to the Dallas Cowboys was finding gaps in his own defense.
Yeah, moving the chains, man.
Yeah, and getting those short passes, fine. He didn't break them for touchdowns like you might get out of Diggs or somebody else, but he got you those first downs. He found a way to get open. He was, to a certain extent, Josh's security blanket.
Yeah.
Nothing else is there. Cole Beasley's open somewhere. Just got to find him on the field.
Right.
You know? So, I don't mind that move at all.
No, let's talk about the move for a minute. Why? I mean, we might as well.
The whole thing's very bizarre. I mean, we have to agree on that, right?
Yeah.
It kind of came out of nowhere.
Well,
it's unprecedented.
Well, somebody's like, oh, it was Josh's call. Josh wanted them both back, and they went along with that.
Reports were he went to Brandon Bean and requested to go get those guys.
Yeah, he's not the GM. He can't demand anything, but they're going to listen
I think he can.
Well, they're going to listen to him when he talks.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to give him everything he ever asked for, but they're going to listen and go, it kind of makes sense. Maybe that was the conversation. We need something on offense. I think we can agree on that right now.
Everybody.
Josh Allen's, I think over the last four games, he's averaging under 200 yards a game passing. Like, that's not going to get you to a Super Bowl. Is that what it is, 210?
I think so.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, you're right, dude. It's got to be.
Something's got to happen.
There's got to be a spark that has to happen. And then when you look at the combination of the previous years, again, Cole Beasley was huge. He had one of the higher catch rates in the NFL. He was very good at moving the chains when we needed it. You know, John Brown was very reliable as well. The guy didn't have a lot of drops. The biggest problem on this wide receiver core right now is drops, man.
Right.
You know, you can't rely
too. Dawson Knox is struggling again,
right,
hanging on the ball.
And we can't rely on just Diggs being the guy, because when you
Diggs
face away,
a defense like we did, he didn't get any play time at all. Really,
And Dawson Knox was like our guy that game.
What did he have, like 30 some yards? I mean,
and that was like one catch. I mean, I think he only had a couple catches.
He didn't have a lot.
But there's got to be other options. There's got to be, and you know, in this offense, when we had Beasley and Brown and Diggs and, you know, these guys together, they were clicking. They had they had good rhythm. I mean, but again, going back to Beasley, we all know there was, you know, issue with Beasley kind of being sour towards certain Bills fans out there.
Right.
Now, it wasn't, to me anyway, and I'll speak on my personal opinion, it wasn't Beasley having a problem with our fan base. It was Beasley having a problem with certain fans.
Right. And the fans having problems with just certain things he said or did.
Which, me, I never had a problem with Beasley. In my opinion, I thought, you know, he had to say what he had to say. You know, there was one thing he said about the organization going a different way than he would like it to, which who knows exactly what that means. It doesn't, to me, I just want the guy that can help us win, like, period. And I don't think he's going to be a distraction. I think
that was the biggest problem. I think the team had issues with the fact that he felt it was absolutely necessary to be a national spokesperson
to be heard,
through social media.
Right.
The team would have preferred him to do whatever he wanted to do as long as it didn't get into the locker room.
Right.
I think that's what they were concerned with.
And what we see is not necessarily the same thing, like you said, with the locker room as what actually happened.
Right.
Because I remember for a while he was very vocal on social media and then it just stopped.
Yeah, he kind of backed away.
But even though it stopped for a really long time, he still didn't get any plays. Like they were sidelining him regardless. So I don't know if it was
part of the problem with both of those guys is
just
injuries.
An attitude problem or what?
Well, like, injuries. Like the last year that John Brown played, he was injured for part of the time. Cole Beasley went through an entire playoffs with a cracked fibula. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, some issue, yep.
He had an issue. Like, and they were getting older. Cole Beasley's 33. You know, they're not young guys. But to me, the reason I don't have a problem has nothing to do with anything other than exactly what you said, dude. There's two things are going to happen. He's going to help the team or he's not. If he's not going to help the team, they're probably not going to keep him.
I don't think they would have brought him back if they didn't think he'd help the team.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, everybody on the team, you have Isaiah McKenzie because you think he's going to help your team. Dane Jackson, like everybody here is with the intent they're going to help the team. But what Cole Beasley has left as far as – and you don't know where his physical stamina and things are at, like games are different than workouts, right?
Yeah.
Like you could attest to, you played the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can practice all you want. That's not an actual game.
Yep. Yeah, it will be a little bit of a transition for him to kind of get going and stuff like that. But it was also a strategic move too, Jeff. I didn't know if you knew this. I actually didn't know this. I just saw it today from Sal Capaccio, I think it was on Twitter. But you can elevate a guy from the practice squad three times,
I think. The fourth time, he's got to be on the roster.
Okay, so that's what it was. So I feel like that's also kind of a strategic move moving forward.
With four games left in the season.
Before the playoffs, right? Did you see anything about that, Jay?
No.
So basically, when you have a guy in the practice squad, you can elevate him so many times to the active roster without basically saying, all right, like he's either going to be on the active or he's a practice squad guy. You can't just keep elevating him when you want him. So the NFL has a rule where you can do it three times, and then the fourth time, like Jeff said, it has to be a decision to keep him on the roster.
So to read that correctly, what I'm assuming you're saying is that they have three games to evaluate whether they want to make him an active member of the roster.
John Brown's already played two.
And in that time, they have to decide who they're going to take out of the roster, too.
Which
I think McKenzie and Davis are both, you know, kind of looking at each other right now.
Well,
like,
you
got
to
be
real careful because you can't just move them to the practice squad because, if you move either one of those guys to the practice squad, there's a really fair chance somebody's going to snag them.
Yep.
But they can get for...
It puts those two on notice, which means like, hey...
I think a message is being sent.
Yes, 100%.
Absolutely.
100%, because, I mean that's Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean in a nutshell, man. Like, they'll do whatever it takes to make sure this football team is good and competitive, and at every position they can bring guys in to do that at. So it's a good move, and I think it's not only going to help just the offense in general, I think it hopefully would help Beasley or Gabe Davis and McKenzie step their shit up too a little bit.
Right.
You know?
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. This organization, since Sean McDermott got here, is built on a process. And part of that process is earning your role. Like, if you want to play in games and you have to earn that spot because you're taking it from somebody, right? Like, I mean, it's stupid, but that's exactly how it works. There's somebody already there. If you want to play in that position, you have to almost remove them from that spot to take over. Just like Cole Beasley and John Brown are now going to have to do. They're going to have to work to possibly move Shakir off the active roster onto the practice squad.
They already cut
Marquez Stevenson,
so they already know what they feel about him. He's gone.
Right. He went to the practice squad, then they just cut him completely. So they can bring Cole Beasley in.
Right.
Yep. So, they're going to be playing some numbers games with the quantity of players that they can work with currently. But, I say the same thing all the time. It's very repetitive. But until these guys really screw the pooch, man, I got to believe there's a reason for everything they do. And that it's the best thing for the team long term. I lost my shit when AJ Epenesa did not play the vast majority of his rookie season.
Yeah.
But look what he is today.
Right.
Like, he is making an impact for this team on a game-to-game basis. Like, he was.
Yeah.
He looked really good.
Yeah,
really good.
I was actually going to use Kair Elam as the same translation to that.
That was part of my conversation today with Dave Jr.
The thing that bugs me is like they keep not using him, which completely basically wipes his rookie year out.
Yep.
And now he's going to have to translate. everything, not everything, but a majority of his game in his rookie year to his second year.
Right.
As a more of a learning curve. So is that going to push him back
slightly a little bit?
You know what I mean?
Well, but they say that too. Like I talked about, like Josh Allen's first year, he was supposed to be sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
Because he was a very raw talent. You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, I got to believe these guys are so good with getting the most out of their players.
Yeah, I genuinely do not envy having to figure all this out because it's a very delicate balancing act between, you know, giving someone time to develop and starting them early when you need them. And, you know, this whole rotational roster idea is great in practice. But
right.
We've seen now that there is a lack of cohesiveness that comes when you do that kind of thing.
Well, in the injuries.
On the defense, the rotational roster has been successful for years. It's
right.
Working great.
But
on the offense, having a million weapons sounded great. I'm not sure it actually worked out very well. I think they just need some time to develop patterns.
Yeah, I mean,
and
Sean McDermott's a defensive coordinator turned coach. So
yeah, and defense, it's just like a thing in football. Defense is always ahead of the offense as far as the learning curve.
Right.
It's just, it always is, right? And that's a good point, Jay. It's just the offense, you know, they have certain cohesiveness between certain guys. Obviously, that's Josh and Diggs.
Right.
But when you're throwing, you know, all these other guys in the mix and beginning of the year, we're like, wow, you know, Gabe Davis should be a 50-plus catch guy. McKenzie, you know, I think... You know, I was saying at the beginning of the year too, Jeff, I was saying McKenzie's probably going to be, you know, right around or a little less productive than Beasley.
Well, Crowder was going to be the freaking slot guy too.
Right.
That was part of the plan.
Right.
Like injuries can just turn shit upside down, man. Your offensive line, when you start getting injuries, like Spencer Brown's out for a while,
dude, we've dealt with it.
Dawkins.
Yeah.
You know, like it really creates havoc. This year
it's been
has
tough.
Been ridiculous.
It almost feels like if you take a deck of cards and you write every player's name on them, shuffle them up, and deal them out every game. Like,
right.
That's what it feels like to me watching it.
Well,
it's like who am I going to see today?
That's good, Jay. That's really good, dude.
And the funny thing is, the first two cards you pull up every time are Josh Allen.
Diggs.
Yeah, those are the ones on the
table. Those guys are on the field
to fill out
every time.
You know?
Yeah, so now you're trying to fill in with all these other pieces that may or may not be regular starters, part-time.
Yeah, man, it's tough. And the thing is, like, we were so healthy for the last 2-3 years.
Last year we lost Trey. First guy
that was
we
like
lost
our big one
to a season engine.
But everybody else was kind of like, you know, we had Tremaine Edmonds.
He in was and out of the lineup
a little bit here and there. But you know, I think Milano, same thing. He had a few problems.
Sure.
But I mean, overall, it was pretty darn healthy. I mean, again, like we haven't sit here and been able to talk about losing our biggest defensive player now in Von Miller, man. Like what other Jason said, what other pieces of the deck of cards can we get thrown at us to be like, all right,
right.
I don't know if I can deal a hand, like if I can play with his hand now.
I'm thinking we're going to Miami pretty healthy. And then I read today that Milano's got a knee injury. Like you said, could be rest, could be day to day.
Yeah.
He might be fine. But there was an interesting quote from Sean McDermott prior to the Jets game. And they were asking him specifically about Milano because he hadn't practiced. He had the oblique injury. You know, what are the odds of him playing, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, we're going to have to wait and see because we don't want to play Matt Milano if he can't contribute significantly to the team. Because in order for us to play him, somebody else who might be able to contribute somewhere comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So to have him dress and not be able to play, it hurts us somewhere. So we have to be very careful about that, you know?
Yeah.
So like you said, when it comes to shuffling the deck, these guys try to memorize the cards before they start shuffling. Like they really want to have a good handle on what the possibilities are before it gets to that point, which is very interesting to me. I didn't think about it that way.
Right.
Like I'm like, if Matt Milano's at like 80 to 90%, you play him. Like you just do. He played like he has never had an injury in his life. The guy was – what he did to Mike White was – it's tough to watch, man. I saw a replay of it today.
What a tackle, man.
Dude,
or what
I'm
a hit, I
so
should say.
Glad
what
he plays for us.
Ever,
I don't want anybody hitting Josh Allen like that ever.
Yeah.
And he's 250.
Right.
6'5".
Right.
Mike White is not.
Do you ever see that video. It's like a parody comedy sketch with the soccer goalie who just keeps getting hit in the fucking head over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, Scott Tenorman takes another one or whatever the hell his name was. Yeah, and it's right. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. Yeah. I mean, that poor guy, I felt so bad.
Yep.
We were brutalizing that man.
Yeah, he had to go to the hospital just to make sure his insides weren't torn apart.
Now he said he's a little sore, but he should be fine. They're anticipating playing this week.
He's got to be more than a little sore, dude.
He's got
to
be.
I mean, that's like...
That had to hurt.
That's like taking a probably a dozen like hard-ass gut punches from like Mike Tyson when you're getting hit like that. Like, come on.
Like I said, the one from Milano was special.
Whew.
Like, he probably was 2 inches taller than he typically is, even bent over like that, because his body was completely extended.
He just ran through Mike White full speed, right into his stomach, like, no remorse.
If he sharpened his shoulder pad, he'd have cut him in half.
It did.
There's no doubt.
It was uncomfortable. It felt a little bit like bullying. I mean, and you hear the same
thing
from...
You even said something to me about that.
You and the announcers, like Romo, were saying the same thing. Like, that's completely illegal. And it's like, does that make it cool? I don't know.
Does that make it all right?
It didn't look cool.
Does it make it any better? Does it make it any better? If, like, well, good news is he didn't die, so... Like,
oh, and speaking of plays,
he's alive. Put him back in the field.
Yeah,
they're not going to talk about this one much more. It's one of those plays that'll probably be forgotten fairly soon. But if I were doing a highlights of the season, one of my first ones would be Dawson Knox
going
center.
Flippity flip.
Going under center on 4th and 1.
Oh,
and having fucking Mosley just jump over the center to tackle him before he even thinks about hiking the ball.
He drew him off so well.
Oh, my God. I don't know who drew that play up. It was flawless.
Was Knox going to take that snap if he didn't go off? Or were they just legitimately trying to draw him outside?
I think that's... I don't know this, obviously.
Right. It's hard to say.
But I got a feeling that's... We're not going to let Dawson Knox do a quarterback sneak.
Romo said out loud before it happened, this is an obvious draw play. Hopefully it works or something like that. And like I think he said quarterback sneak,
but they don't want to get Josh Allen hurt.
Right.
So they have Dawson Knox do the sneak, which is a great play. I mean, I'd love to see him actually try to pull that off sometime.
But the other thing too was when Dawson Knox got flipping in the air, and the other guy hit him, and he kind of pushed him forward over the line. That was great, too. I love
that. That was.
Knox had a couple of really good highlights.
That double flip. If the second guy hadn't hit him, he probably wouldn't have been in.
Well, the fact that he landed the way he did with the ball over the goal line.
Yeah,
that
was, that's what I'm saying.
How did that happen?
The other guy kind of pushed him in a little bit. He kept him in the air longer.
Like, Josh Allen, I think, still had the better move as far as, like, if you were judging an Olympic competition or whatever.
Oh,
Josh
has
looked
pretty
good.
Porn,
that
man.
Double camel with a twist or whatever he did was pretty impressive.
That's the shit that gives me, like, you know, a little bit of trepidation for the fact that they could get hurt and stuff, but it also is exciting football. I love
but
that.
But it's funny because it a good situation or a good point to that point is Kyler Murray on second or third play from scrimmage last night, a non-contact injury, just went to make
told,
a cut
yeah.
to cut up field, torn ACL, he's done.
I told Nikki because she was at, she's like, do you think he's done for the season? I go, it was non-contact. The
is
way,
that another turf injury
or grass? That's natural grass.
That's
there.
Natural grass. But the funny thing is,
the
if
whole
you
thing
watch
is a
it,
very heated argument that I don't know if there's anybody who's right about it.
Von Miller,
I hear you, dude.
It was awesome. Von Miller was on Pat McAfee even before Josh, and it was shortly after the surgery. He's like, he ended up with 2 surgeries because they actually take a piece of tendon, I think, from his other knee, so both knees had to get surgery on him. But because he'd had an ACL tear before, it's now divided equally among the two knees. So he figures he'll be better than ever when he comes back.
Or he's twice as likely to get injured again.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works, man. I really don't. But he's excited to get back on the field. Like he's thinking 5 or 6 months he'll be back practicing with the team and shit like that. Which puts
that'd
him,
be awesome, man.
Which puts him like. Before, I think August is
now. When you
preseason.
Say he's thinking, you mean that's what Von Miller said?
That's what Von Miller said.
I'm not sure he's the best judge of that, but
that's true.
Yeah,
he thinks
true,
he's
going to
play tomorrow every
he's
time.
He's been through it before.
Can't trust that. Yeah.
But it's funny because he tells a story that, and anybody who is familiar with Pat McAfee or his show, it really is pretty cool. It's a cool show. I enjoy it.
It is.
But one of the things he talked about was on the operating table, like they give him some stuff and it made him kind of loopy. So he freaking called Brandon Bean on the operating table. I don't know if they'd started the surgery yet or not, but he literally called Brandon Bean from his cell phone and said, when I get back from the injury, when I get back to Buffalo, I want to shadow you.
Oh, yeah,
I heard that. Because I want to be a GM.
I saw that, yep.
You know, and then, like, after the surgery, somebody told him what he did. Like, he barely remembered it or whatever, and then he's like, holy shit, I did do that. So he called Brandon Bean. What do you think Brandon Bean said?
What?
You can absolutely fucking shadow me.
Yeah.
That's cool.
No doubt.
Absolutely, dude. You know?
That's cool, man.
I'll teach you everything I can about being a GM.
Yeah.
Bob Miller, it knocked his socks off.
After a couple of injuries, it's time to start thinking about the career after the career, you know?
He wants to play 5 years. He's like, he said, I didn't do a 6-year contract to play a year or two.
No.
Like, I signed a 6-year contract. I intend to fulfill that contract. Like, yeah. I want to win Super Bowls with this team. I want to be there this year when they win 57. You know, I'll be there.
What a crazy way to finish the season through all the trepidation and the injuries and not having Von Miller and Josh's UCL, and the list goes on. And if we end up winning the bowl with all of that, I mean, that would just make it even more bitter, like bittersweet. And, you know,
for sure,
for certain reasons.
Well,
you know,
Von Miller at that point, he's healthy. He's walking on it now, he said. So he's healthy enough. He'll be out there celebrating with the guys and shit.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely will. But yeah, it was so cool. And Josh Allen talking about, you know, this team. And I don't know if you heard about Jerry Sullivan. I'm sure you did.
Oh, yeah.
The question about the freaking
yep.
team doesn't look like their Super Bowl.
Well, you heard he got canned, right? Point.
I hope so. It's about damn time.
Well, it was because of that live stream he did, and he went off on a rant saying that women fans shouldn't be basically allowed to have opinion about football because they don't know what they're talking about.
Are you serious?
Swear to God. It's all over Twitter,
wow.
dude. He got.
I did not see that. It's about time.
He got canned.
That is like one of the dumbest things. In fact, they talked about it on Good Morning Football, and I can't remember the woman's name who's on with the other three dudes, but she's a journalist. She's like a journalism major. Like, that's what she went to school for. And she's like, I would never do that. Like, you minimally phrase it as a question. Like, do you think where this offense is right now, they're capable of winning a Super Bowl? And then you allow the guy to answer a question. But no, Sullivan's like, you really don't look like you're in a position to win a Super Bowl. And Josh is like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, whatever. Yeah,
thanks, Jerry.
I think that's what I would have said is, like, was there a question there? Are you
right. going to Yeah, like, isn't that normally...
Are we just having a conversation?
Or? Yeah, isn't that normally what you do? You're a reporter. Yeah. Like, you ask them questions. You don't tell them.
Yeah.
What a dumbass.
You don't look good. Okay, thanks for coming.
Yeah, yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. But he got canned after being an idiot again. And
maybe he wanted to get canned or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, the guy's, he's one of those journalists that you either like him or you just don't.
Right.
You know, there's no kind of like in between.
I don't know much about the guy from what I understand.
I can't say I know a ton either.
He's been an anti-Bills advocate for quite a while.
Very it much so. Like he, he's one of those Bills journalists that really digs into the worst of whatever he can he can find to say about the team.
Well, and to a certain extent, I think they might have even talked about this somewhere on maybe it was Good Morning Football or one of them. I mean, to a certain extent, it was Good Morning Football. I think it was Kyle Brandt was the one saying that, like, to a certain extent, you don't mind the local media kind of calling out a team. It can't always be rah, rah, great, great, you know.
No, you can.
You guys are wonderful.
But
so you can hold a team accountable. You can ask them tough questions, but you still got to treat them with some respect.
Well, and like, do it on your fucking podcast. Don't do it in the middle of a press conference.
Right, right.
But, I mean, again, like, if you're going to use... Like, I don't think your offense looks to be good enough to win a Super Bowl. Like, that
really, that's your opinion.
It doesn't really do you any good as a journalist. Like, if you want it to, like you said, if you want to spice things up, so to speak, and kind of dig into Josh Allen, form it as a question, dude. You know, hey, Josh, why do you think your offense looks the way it does the last few weeks? Do you think it's good enough to win a Super Bowl?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, ask the question, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean, generally you get the same response. They're playing complimentary football, and they're winning fucking football games. Again, this was a conversation, and I've said this probably 8 times today alone. They are 10-3. 4 consecutive season with 10 wins. First time, it's the second time in the team's history, first time since the 4 Super Bowl runs.
Yeah, 94 was it 94 the last time we had 10-3 like in that era?
Yes, right? But the 4 consecutive Super Bowls were all 10 plus wins.
Yeah.
So that's the last time we had 4 consecutive
10
wins or more seasons. This is the first time since then. So I personally feel like I got to be kind of cautious when I become too critical of a team that's 10-3. They're number one in the AFC currently. You know, will they end up there? Who knows? They probably could. Whether they will or not, I have no idea. Kansas City still looks really, really good. The teams in their own division are much tougher than they've been historically for the last few years.
Yep.
But
things are starting to play out, you know.
But correct, well, yeah.
And one of the episodes we have had this, you know, season of our podcast discuss that, managing your expectations,
right,
trying to be realistic about the fact that these guys are humans and they're going to have issues, and that really, ultimately, it doesn't matter as long as they can make it to the playoffs. If they can make it to the playoffs and work their shit out by then, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and I can be...
And being 10-3 right now gives us the best possible chance to make it to the playoffs. So what the fuck do you have to be upset about until they screw it up then?
Correct. Yep. You can be pissed off they're not undefeated.
Yep.
That's fine.
Sure.
But realistically, nobody's undefeated. Realistically, that's pretty rare in the NFL. The fact that they are leading the AFC is awesome.
Yep.
Absolutely.
It really is. And like I was going to say, is everything is starting to kind of unfold the way that we kind of anticipated it here at the end of the season. You know, the Jets are a decent football team, but they just... they're too young yet to know how to win in this later of a stretch. The Dolphins had 2 tough games back to back, and they lost both of them because they're not there yet. They don't have the dogs to know how to win tough games yet. They were beating bad teams. Now, look, the Dolphins are coming into Buffalo. They're calling for lake effect snow. I mean, advantage
cold
us, dude.
Lake effect, you know, snow. Yep.
Advantage us, like in advantage us meaning, like, honestly. There's guys on that team that just don't play in cold weather. They haven't through their high school career, through college, and in the pros because they're in Miami. Number one is Tua, dude. Tua has never played
in Hawaii
cold weather unless he's been here or anywhere else in our division.
Northeast, yeah.
Correct. But
New England.
You know, I mean, the dude's small. He's got small hands. What's hard to do when you're throwing a football in cold
weather? And he doesn't have great velocity on his passes. They're talking today, like, if you take away the middle of the field, those boundary passes are much tougher for Tua than those passes, slants and shit like that across. And that's what that's what the Chargers did. They took the center of the field away from him. Those quick, easy slants and Tyreek Hill and Waddle, and so they took that away. They emphasized that. And he struggled. He was 3 of 17.
Yeah.
And then he ended up going 7 for 11 after that.
Dude.
So he ended up like 30%, but like he was horrible, like horrible.
And they had to have freaking heaters on their sideline in 55-degree weather. Did you hear about that?
Is that a dome stadium?
Yes, but it's open air, so what happens is you can get airflow through it.
Right.
But I mean, come on, dude, it's 55. I mean, it was 55. And that's L.A. Like, 55 isn't like, oh, it's chilly. Yeah. Like,
well, the people in L.A. were saying it was kind of cold.
Well, yeah, but that's because that's what you're used to. That's what Miami's used to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're used to, if it drops, they're talking about in Florida, if it gets below 70 degrees, people grab jackets.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's going to be a high of whatever, 20, oh, it's gonna, 25 yeah. or something in snow. I mean,
I saw one of those little TikTok, Facebook reel things, whatever, that it was a snowplow pushing like a millimeter of snow down a street in London as they were trying to clear the snow off for the cars.
Geez.
It's funny because I'm pretty sure Miami Dolphins with Tua are 0-4 in their 4 trips to Buffalo.
Yep.
So
Tua's not good. I'm just
they're just
telling,
not good in the snow.
It's hard to grip a big football when it's frozen and freezing ass cold weather.
It's hard enough when it's not.
And it's snowing.
Yeah, it's hard enough when it's not, but when it is,
you know,
this
is one of those games that when you discuss the idea of whether we need a dome or not, it's a selling point, right? Like, you need to know that we're going to have an advantage at least once a year against a team like Miami.
Right.
So hopefully this will be a litmus test to prove that it actually will help and that it was deserved.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to give you that. Personally,
if we, you know, go through history and look at, like he said, Miami and Buffalo, they don't do too great in the winter, right?
Right.
Like, that's the point.
Right.
So I guess we'll see.
But because we're more of that high-flying team that I always hoped we would be one day, you know, I also can see the argument for having a dome.
Yep.
But you're right. This is specifically that game when Arizona, L.A., Dallas, Miami, when they have to come to Buffalo in December or January. I mean, which is why we're trying to win the AFC. Like, then everybody comes here. Kansas City.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. You're coming here, man.
Baltimore, whoever it is, they're coming here.
Yep.
So, I mean, here's hoping, dude. I really hope the Bills can make some plays and start to move towards what we talked about. You know, back to that team. Because, I mean, then we go on the road to Chicago. Right, I think next.
Chicago, Christmas Eve.
That's going to be a little cool. That's not going to be exactly a warm weather thing, right? They don't have a dome or anything. Is that outdoors?
No, that's open field.
That's in Chicago could be windy. You don't know what you're going to get
and you're
there.
They're not a great team, but, you know, a Justin Fields.
He's the wild card right now.
He could try to ruin your day as a defense. Absolutely. So that's a guy you got to pay attention to.
Baltimore always scares me because of Lamar Jackson. I'm starting to feel that way about Justin Fields because you don't know for sure what you're going to get.
Well, let's see if Lamar's going to be – at what point is he going to be healthy enough to move forward, man? I mean, they're saying his knee injury is a sprained knee, but, I mean, I think that was the same knee here last year. So,
yeah.
You know, let's see how that rolls, you know.
For sure. Tyreek Hill's nursing an ankle, yeah.
But, yeah, let's end the podcast with, obviously, talking about this Miami game coming up.
Right.
You know, who we think's going to win the game, what our offensive players, defensive players, that sort
of
thing.
Let's roll. Let's do it.
You know.
Who wants to go first today? Jace, what do you think? How about we start with the offensive player of the game?
Well, I think we're going to actually see something out of Diggs, so I'm going to go ahead and say Stephon Diggs is the offensive player.
He's due for a bounce back.
Yeah, he's been getting shut down pretty hard the last few games. So
yeah, this one in particular.
Are you picking Diggs because they caught him saying on the sideline against the Patriots, I fucking want Miami?
I don't know if that's actually something that happened or not, but like I've heard it both ways.
Dude, it happened.
It did?
I saw it on Twitter, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope it happens.
I like that.
As far as the score prediction, I'm thinking, you know, just because of the weather, the score is going to be lower in general. So I would say probably somewhere in the neighborhood of around like 27 to, I don't know, let's say 17.
How about defense player? You got anybody in mind?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Jordan Phillips did not play this past game, so.
I'm trying to coax
him. I think Trey White's pretty hot. I mean, he's pretty hyped up.
That was my choice. He just played his first complete game since the injury.
And he looked really, really excited the whole time.
They didn't go his way very often, man.
No.
They did not go his way very much. So I like those.
Nice.
Like the score. Awesome. Yep. All right, buddy, you're up.
I'm gonna say offensively, I'm going to stick to probably – I was going between a couple guys, but I'm going to stick with Dawson Knox this week. I think he can be kind of like a tweener guy, right? Like a guy that can be a red zone threat this week. A guy that, and I would say maybe not in the stat sheet as far as catches or touchdowns, but a guy that can help with protection, things like that. So just kind of an overall offensive player of the week. Defensively, I'm sticking with Matt Milano again.
It's not a bad play, man. Every week he's playing right now is just out of his mind. It's like, did you see Matt Milano? Did you see what he did?
He's just playing out of his mind, dude.
He is playing fantastic.
Yeah, and he's just
fantastic.
I got to stick with him because I think he can be a key factor with containing Tua in the pocket, and then also, you know, if Tua tries to get outside the pocket, scrambling and stuff like that. I mean, Milano, he's sideline to sideline. He's everywhere, man. So it's hard not to say that he couldn't be that again this week. But as far as the score goes, I'm kind of sticking with Jay. I think it's going to be a little low based on the weather, but I think it's going to be more of a dominant win as far as that goes. I think we're about 7.5 spread right now. I think it is, but I'm going to go with like a 21-10 Bills game.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. And you don't know what the wind's going to be like, too. Even field goals could be hard to come
by. If it's
by.
Lake effect snow, it's probably going to be windy. So I'm thinking we're going to be in that area.
Yeah, I like that. And for me, that's a good point. With the weather conditions being what they are, I think they will attempt to run the ball more. I think they might feel like they have to only because of the weather conditions. And I like James Cook. Like, if they still run that spread offense where they can maybe get him to the second level, when you know where you're going and the other team doesn't and they're not prepared to play in this kind of weather, he's liable to break one. I mean, he's liable to break a big one. He has that ability.
He's a virgin snow guy.
He is. Yeah, he is.
Doesn't even know what a snow brush is.
No. No, it'll be interesting, no doubt, dude. But like I say, they always say that the tie goes to the offense because they know where they're going.
Yeah.
The defense has to make that sudden move, that last cut. And, yeah. So, anyways, that's offense. I like James Cook, either catching a long ball or running for one. On defense, I'm going to go Ed Oliver, man. He's been so close. Like, they're double team. He's beaten double teams. He's getting in the backfield. He's moving guys. And one of these games, he's going to break out for 1.5, 2 sacks. And it's going to look like that Thanksgiving Dallas game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he loves playing on Thanksgiving, obviously. But
yeah, I was just going to say, too, like, I think our defensive line in general is going to have a big game. It's going to be a
big game. Yep. I agree 100%.
I think they're starting to kind of catch a rhythm, so to speak.
For sure.
Epinesa's getting in
and
the mix.
And everybody's contributing, too. I mean, that's the cool part. Like, even Settle and Daquan Jones, they're getting in the backfield. It's looking really good. Very, like Von Miller said, man, we're fine. Like, I wish I were there. I would rather be playing. But trust me, I play with these guys. We're fine. Our defensive line is going to be fine. You know?
He has brought a lot of positive energy to this team.
It's funny because he actually said that during his conversation with Pat McAfee's crew, is the fact that, like, I'm not making this shit up. Like, I'm excited for this opportunity to go through the rehab and get back on the field and be with my, you know, my teammates. And he said, I have a very positive attitude. It's like, that's just who I am. I believe it makes a difference. So that's a great point.
And honestly, before all this shit went down with COVID, Beasley was the same way, man. He was one of those guys.
Yep.
It will be nice to have him back in that regard.
I do too. I really hope that he makes a big difference to this squad and really helps this team maybe get over the top. You know, that would be fantastic.
It's the best outcome for that, right? Like, to have him come back and to really excel would be fantastic. It would make him feel vindicated. It would make us do better. Like, it's a win-win.
Yep. Right. Yep. Like, he didn't leave on the best of terms necessarily. And same thing with John Brown. John Brown's like, yeah, I didn't even know it till I saw it in a tweet or something like that. So
yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
There was some negative stuff from both these guys. So having them back with the team, possibly ending their career with the Bills on a high note would be awesome.
Yep.
What's your score? Defensively. So I'm with you guys. I think it's going to be hard to put up points. I'm a little more optimistic. I think the field goals are going to be tough. So I think you go for it on fourth down. I see 4 touchdowns, 28 for the Buffalo Bills. For the Dolphins, I really think it's going to be 13, and I think it's going to be 2 touchdowns with a mixed extra point. I really do.
Yeah.
Like, I got a feeling the kicking game in the snow and shit's going to be, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
You know?
They're calling
We're
for...
We're going to see a Charlie Brown kick. Is that what you're saying?
I think it's entirely possible.
It's tough in that stadium when it's snowy and
when
windy, man.
Snowy and windy.
They're calling for 4 to 7 inches, I think they said.
Yeah, that's a fair amount of snow. That could be a heavy snow.
So I gave us a 10-point victory. You gave us an 11-point victory. You gave us a 15-point victory.
28-13.
Yes. Yep. 28-13.
Cool.
I like it.
I do too.
I like,
man,
all of it.
I'll take it. If you mix them all together and just average out that spread, I'll take it.
It does fit for our personalities because I think I'm the most cynical out of all of us,
and you're definitely the most optimistic. Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever the hell I was trying to say.
Optimistic.
Yeah. Why don't you tell them how to listen to the podcast, buddy?
Well, you can find us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ETD Buffalo. And you can listen to us wherever the heck you like. We're everywhere. Our host is on anchor.fm, or you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever.
So, sweet. Yeah, we're back finally. Sorry you missed a couple weeks, everybody that likes to listen to our podcast. But
Sauce Quest next week.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll do Sauce Quest.
Much sauce, many quests.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we'll get back into that, too, because we got to get some more sauces flowing around here.
Yep.
That's for sure.
That's important.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Cool. I just got a new one, too.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for listening. Really appreciate it. And, yeah, big week this week.
Huge.
Division game against Miami to continue the streak and stay number one in the AFC conference. So, big, big one.
Mucho importante.
Yep. All right. Just want to end it with, where else would you rather be than right here, right now? Go Bills.
Go Bills.